Visibility is 10 miles, with the wind from the southwest at 7 miles per hour. The current temperature is 66.
Everybody, Z103.com. Time for another edition of the Basics of Economic Development. This episode number 11. Mark Wickersham, take it away.
Hey, good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be back with you. Today, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about something that we've referred to as CEDIT. CEDIT is an acronym. In the world that I work in, we have all sorts of acronyms. And CEDIT is an acronym for County Economic Development Income Tax. County Economic Development Income Tax.
I've always wondered, and now I know that.
Yeah, that's right. So CEDIT was enacted originally by the Indiana General Assembly as a tax mechanism in 1987, and it was first adopted in Huntington County by the Huntington County Council in 1997 to support opportunities for growth. And if the listening audience recalls, from 1997 to 2007, the industrial base in Huntington County was really kind of hurting, frankly. We had 16 different companies had to close for whatever reason and leave town, and that left an industrial building vacancy rate of 63%. So we needed to do something. I mean, we couldn't just sit by and watch our assessed values continue to decline. Unemployment was high, and there really wasn't a lot of jobs available at that point. So County Council adopted a CEDIT tax mechanism to try to help. The idea was that, and still is, that local government basically taxes wages in order to use those funds to incentivize the creation of more jobs and higher hourly wages. These are taxes, and we have to be really careful with how the elected officials use this tax revenue, because these are taxes paid directly by wage earners, not their employers. So the wage earners are expecting a return on their investment, as they should. But to some extent, this concept really isn't all that much different than a gasoline user tax or a wheel tax, or maybe a farm community will recognize the soybean checkoff program as a marketing tool, where you pay a little bit of money off of each bushel of soybeans raised in order to help create new market opportunities to sell the products. In essence, we're reinvesting in ourselves. And sometimes it's not a popular thing to do in the first place, but on the other hand, companies and other developers and site selection consultants and so forth appreciate and recognize communities that are willing to reinvest in themselves in order to make good things happen. So in 2008, I began serving as a director of our Economic Development Corporation, and at the time, the CEDIT tax rate, and it continues today at the same rate, 0.25% of wages. And those revenue streams, however, to the local units of government over the years are up almost 30%. And so it's not because they raised taxes, it's because it worked. More people are working, they're working in jobs that pay more per hour, and as a result, the percentage generates simply more money. It's a direct correlation of growth and reflects the number of people working in our county, again, and the hourly incomes that are associated. Once it was enacted locally, each community's unit of government is required to file a multi-year capital improvement plan in order to be eligible for what's called their distributive share of the revenues. And they're not intended to just bankroll the money. The 75% of the money at minimum has to actually be spent within the plan. They're not allowed to just keep rolling it over. They have to use it. But what happens is, as you file your state income tax return, a portion of those funds associated with your income tax returns then are distributed by the states back to the local units of government based on the various populations of the workforce within each county. Now, more recently, CEDIT has become a new acronym, more broadly, called the Local Income Tax. or LIT. Once again, a lot of acronyms, but LIT, when you hear an elected official, or in my world, if I hear somebody talk about LIT, they're talking about what once was simply called seated. It's the same basic process, but the statutes have the state statutes have become fairly flexible on this stuff, so it allows local units of government a lot of latitude to use their revenues under LIT, as it's called today. Generally speaking, when we use LIT as an incentive to create jobs, the LIT grant process, as we refer to it, is used instead of tax abatement. So instead of having the benefit of a discounted property tax over a 10-year period, a company might instead select a grant up front instead of the property tax abatement. So they'll have to pay 100% of the property taxes from day one, but they're getting a little bit of cash up front when they need it most, when they've just invested and created the jobs in the first place. Now, before any of these funds are ever released to a company, we create, through my agency, working together with either the city attorney or the county attorney, to figure out how to do a grant agreement contract so that all parties involved understand under what circumstances funds can be dispensed or dispersed, and how they have to be used, and what are the consequences, if any, for not spending it the way it's intended. So the grants are actually done under, you know, LIT was created under Indiana Code Section 6-3.6281. Not that that's relevant to anybody, but it'll
easy for you to say.
Yeah, right. I have it written down, and I still can't say it. But the code allows for the use of LIT for the following types of things: acquisition of land, interests in land, site improvements, infrastructure improvements, building construction, rehabilitation, renovation, enlargement of buildings or structure, purchase and operation of machinery, equipment, furniture, furnishings, facilities in general, administrative expenses, operating expenses, and to the extent not otherwise allowed under the statute or substance, removal of or remedial action designed to clean up a property to make it usable, or any combination of those. So what you can see is a very broad menu of how the funds can be used, and that's why it's important to have agreements and contracts in place and elected officials that are conscientious about how the funds are used. So the grant contracts that I mentioned typically require performance-based metrics to be met, and generally the monies are dispersed in partial draws, if you will, not unlike a residential construction loan if you're building a new house. So you'd get a draw at acquisition, you'd get a draw at framing or concrete, you get a draw when the project's finished and you've got a certificate of occupancy, and often in industrial cases, the elected officials want the industries that are benefiting directly from a seat award to have a public announcement that they're spending and investing in the community, and they like to have photos of the projects and do ribbon cuttings associated with the investments, so that the general public understands precisely what a company was doing they received approval for grant funds. Finally, there are clawbacks included in the contract, as we call them. So if there are defaults in some way or another, the companies that were benefited are supposed to pay us back some measure of money, depending on the contract language. So that's a quick overview of how it works. Happy to, I don't know if you've heard anything that you have any questions about there, but glad to help. So.
Oh, only one quick question. You say that the money has to be spent and can't be rolled over, but and I realize I may be equating this too much with consumer level thinking, but if a person says, well, but we want to try to build up a nest egg just in case some emergency comes along, is part of spending that maybe investing it in something to help it grow or stock options? Or?
Yeah, well, to the extent that is addressed, it's when the municipal governments set up their capital improvement plans. They have a multi-year approach, like it'd be a three-year plan or a five-year plan, that kind of thing. And each document defines the answer to that question specifically. And normally what happens is they're not required to spend 100% of it each year. It's how you use the entire plan. The funds that are, because the funds are dispersed from the state to the counties on a monthly basis.
Got
and
it.
So they go into local banks and other accounts managed by the municipalities, and they earn interest until needed, basically. And then if there are unencumbered or unused dollars, that revert back to the control of the county council in this case. Typically, or in the city's case, the mayor. And so there are some ways for municipalities to, earn a little income from that process to put a nest egg in place so we can have more than just the monthly revenue stream. And it accumulates over a multiple year period. But the elected officials involved are mindful of the fact that, hey, you know, the taxpayers can invest their own money too, right? So
yes.
If you're going to tax someone and take their money for this sort of thing, it needs to be used very wisely. Otherwise, it needs to just stay with the taxpayers.
That's right. Well, and it makes sense. So
what I like about the program at this point, and I'm in year 17 in Huntington County, over the 17-year period that I've been part of the process, when we've used CDOT dollars, for every $1 of public support, the private sector has spent $62.50 of their own money.
Wow.
So, like, if most of us, if our bank would call or our, whoever we're investing with, they call and say, give me a dollar and I'll invest it and you'll get $62.50 back, most of us would take that in a heartbeat.
Well, I think so. I think I'd be investing a lot of dollars in that.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, that is fantastic. Well, thank you for another great edition. We'll see you back here next week.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Let's get back into the music right here on the Z.